Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. You are not 9 to 5 and neither are we. Conveniently open online 365 days per year, 24 hours per day.
Who have lost everything.
Elaine and Jimmy are 68. They still look at each other the same way they did when they first met, and they're still excited about what comes next. If you're a homeowner over 60, a lifetime loan secured against your house from Spry Finance could help you to keep enjoying life. For a free consultation in the comfort of your own home, talk to us at 01582 580 or visit spryfinance.ie. Because life never gets old. Over 60s only. Product eligibility criteria apply. Senior Money Mortgages Ireland DAC, trading as Seniors Money, Spry Finance and Spry is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
Hi, I'm at the Garda station, but it's nothing. I told this girl I was seeing for a while that I'd put shots of her up online. Shots she sent me, so they're mine, really. I only said I'd do it, but the guards are saying that's a crime now. It's not my fault, Mum. I didn't do anything. I only said I would.
Threatening to share intimate images is a crime with serious consequences. Contact your local Garda station if you need to report it. Brought to you by the Government of Ireland.
It's almost 9 o'clock on RTE Radio 1 with Dundeel Motors, home to Ireland's trusted car dealerships. Upgrading your family car? The right car for your family is on dundeel.ie.
That's it from Maggie and me. Thanks for listening on Sound today. Mark Dwyer here in studio and Damien Gavigan in Donegal. Our broadcast coordinator, Anne-Marie Donnell. Our editors, Cathy Farrell and Paddy Burnock. And our series editor is John Burke.
Stay tuned for Oliver Callan, who's coming up after nine. Before that, though, here's the news now with Brian Jennings.
Good morning. Gardaí in Dublin have begun a murder investigation following the violent death of a man in Finglas last night. The man, who is in his 60s, was attacked at a house in Dunsink Green just after midnight. Our crime correspondent, Paul Reynolds.
Gardaí and the emergency services were called to the house in Dunsink Green in Finglas in the early hours of this morning after a man in his 60s was attacked and fatally injured. It's believed a number of people called to the house and a row broke out and the victim sustained fatal stab wounds. He was taken to Connolly Hospital where attempts to resuscitate him failed and he was pronounced dead there a short time later. Gardaí have set up an incident room at Finglas Garda station and a senior investigating officer has been appointed. A family liaison officer is to be assigned to the family. The scene has been preserved pending the arrival of the Garda Technical Bureau, who will conduct a forensic examination of the scene later today. The state pathologist will also carry out a post-mortem. Gardaí are still trying to establish the facts surrounding the fatal attack, but at this early stage in the investigation, they do not suspect the murder is gang-related, but is possibly more likely related to a local row. Paul Reynolds, RTE News, Finglas, Dublin.
Israel's Security Cabinet is due to meet today to discuss a 60-day ceasefire deal with Hezbollah in Lebanon. According to reports, the deal would see Israeli troops gradually withdraw from Lebanon while Hezbollah would move away from the Israeli border. Israeli troops began a land invasion of Lebanon almost 2 months ago in response to almost a year of rocket attacks from Hezbollah. Any ceasefire in Lebanon would not directly affect Israel's war in Gaza. In the general election, the final leaders' debate of the campaign will be televised tonight on RTE ahead of polling day on Friday. The primetime programme will feature the three leaders who could potentially be Taoiseach, Simon Harris, Micheál Martin and Mary Lou MacDonald. The leaders' debate will be live on RTE One, the RTE News Channel and the RTE Player from 9:35pm. An Irish person is believed to have been among the passengers on board a tourist yacht which capsized yesterday in the Red Sea. The Department of Foreign Affairs has said it is aware of this incident and is providing consular assistance. Egyptian authorities said more than a dozen people, including foreigners, are still missing. 28 people have been rescued. The vessel was carrying tourists on a diving trip when it sank.
RTE Radio 1 weather with Grant. From HVO biofuel compatible condensing boilers to heat pumps and underfloor heating. Trust Grant to heat your home. Visit grant.ie.
Largely dry and sunny in most areas today, apart from some well-scattered showers, most likely in coastal parts of the north, west and south. Cloud building in the south and southeast later this evening, with heavy showers or longer spells of rain developing. Highest temperatures 5 to 9 degrees. And that's all for now. We'll have news again at 10.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by itsforwomen.ie, Irish online car insurance that's driven to offer big discounts and even bigger rewards.
Good day to you all. It's Oliver on the air until 10. It is Tuesday now, the 26th of November 2024. Trim your wicks and sharpen your wits, why don't you? And get in touch with us in the usual way. The WhatsApp is 087 032 32 32. The text is 51551 and you can email Oliver at rte.ie. I'm very excited for our show today because I'm going to be chatting this morning to Edward Berger, who is the director of Conclave. It's the new political thriller film which imagines kind of the behind the scenes of a secret papal election. So lots of intrigue, lots of shenanigans, and it's based on a deadly book by Robert Harris, who was in actually with us a couple of months ago and was talking very excitedly about this film project. Conclave came out a couple of years ago as a book, and it kind of like, it felt like it was about what might happen if a reforming liberal pope that was like Pope Francis, as he was elected at the time, what happens after somebody like that dies. And Conclave has all the fervour of an Oscar winner, Ralph Fiennes acting himself raw in this one, alongside Stanley Tucci and John Lithgow. And there's a great Irish character in the story as well, mercifully played in the film by Irish actor Breen F. O'Byrne, who's a caveman, I believe, isn't he? And that film, Conclave, is coming to cinemas on Friday. And this is the same director, by the way, who gave the world All Quiet on the Western Front, that amazing anti-war film, hugely cinematic, sweeping piece that came out and won 4 Oscars, one of which beat on Colleen Kewan to the Best International Feature. So we'll never forgive Edward Berger, but we'll still chat to him all the same. And we're also going to be meeting Sharon Smurfit. She is a self-employed golf consultant, but there is no escaping that surname for sure. And you don't get to hear often from people who are willing to talk about a big Irish dynasty family and what it's like growing up the child of a billionaire, as he was at one point. So we'll find out when we talk to Sharon later on this morning. 51551 for your texts. Now, yesterday when we were talking about Christmas rom-coms, we were discussing cuffing season, the horrible term for that time of the year when people just attach themselves to someone they've just met, a date, one date, and like, yeah, you'll do because it's November and I'm going to cuff myself to you all the way just to get through the winter. And look, we'll go our separate ways in January and we will never think about this nearly never was romance ever again. So as if the dating scene wasn't treacherous and deadly enough, Gen Z are also now sledging people as well as cuffing them. It's the newest dating trend, and it's nothing to do with winter sports or being a Tyrone footballer attacking somebody's family history on a football field, as sledging is in some parts of the Ulster Championship. No, the term refers to those who deliberately draw out dates with people they're not interested in or delay a breakup with someone they're already in a relationship with and drag them along like a sledge until the festive period is over and things are thawing out all the way at the back end of January. Although in Ireland, that would have to be around St. Patrick's Day, wouldn't it? You'd have to do a lot of sledging to keep going through the freezing season. And this is a survey. This is the London Independent is telling about this. 1 in 10 people aged 18 to 25 will keep seeing someone they don't like at all the way through the winter. And 15% admit to having been in a relationship where they waited until after the Christmas and maybe then even New Year to break up with them. So do they just hang on to someone just so they can get an old present? And the stress of we've only started going out in at Halloween, do we do presents? And it's not just the girls. I'm sure some of the boys are still hanging around for those shower gel and spray deodorant packs that they so adore at Christmas time. So there you are now. Cuffing and sledging is a thing. David Walliams is in the news. He always is this time of the year because he gobbles up all the children's book sales, British children's author. And he's been talking to a podcast in Australia released yesterday. And he's been the source of lots of rumour because he's a little bit camp and he's literally written a book called The Boy in the Dress. So people have been very kind of mean to him over the years and going, ah, yes, maybe you're not quite out, or is there something going on in the closet there? So he was speaking, it's called Uncomfortable Conversations, the podcast, an Australian thing, and he was talking about his gender identity and sexuality. And I think it's quite an interesting one. He's busy asked, what do you think you would be doing if you, David Walliams, were 19, in age 19, that is, in 2024?
I mean, I think in a way, I probably say I'm non-binary, I think, probably.
And what about your sexuality? You always lean into the, you know, being Britain's most famous bi-curious comedian or something. Is that a real reflection of your adolescence?
I'd say so. But again, it just almost seems odd because it almost feels like a sort of, like these kind of things were like, it's like a big deal to talk about it. This is like, I don't really understand why it's such a big deal.
Then it's not if it's not, isn't it?
Sometimes I think my life would be a lot simpler if I was just gay.
That's a curious thing to say, isn't it? Now, it's not a coming out per se, despite all the headlines getting very excited around the place, but it's kind of like if I had options that the generation of the late teenagers have today, he would choose to have one of those labels that are now available. He's a 53-year-old man right now, but there you go. I thought it's quite curious, David Walliams. By the way, he does gobble all the children's book sales, but we're going to do a big show tomorrow celebrating Irish children's authors and Irish children's books with lots of small people. And I've been reading some books as well, so we'll bring that to you tomorrow, dedicating the whole programme to it, like we promised we would when we did the same thing in July and got such a lovely response to it. Buy Irish for the Christmas, that's what we're saying. And if you're writing your letters to Santi, suggest Irish children's books. Children, thank you very much. Now, a documentary is out. It's on Sky and Now TV in Ireland, and it'll get you to throw your phone away into the sea and never think about it again. Terrifying documentary, according to The Guardian, that will leave you a gibbering wreck. Ronan Farrow delves into cyber surveillance, lifting the lid basically on how easy it is for governments, even the ones we consider benign, to know your every move. So you have to go and hide out in the hills, basically. Ronan Farrow, he's an amazing guy. He's a journalist with The New Yorker. He is the fellow who started the Me Too movement with an expose of what was going on in Hollywood. He became interested in digital spying surveillance when he found himself the very subject of it. And it's a result of his investigations into serious sexual assault investigations against high-profile people like a US Supreme Court nominee, Brett Kavanaugh, who was confirmed in the end. He denies all the allegations against him. And, of course, the Harvey Weinstein investigation as well. So it's a huge, huge industry. Not many companies willing to speak to a documentary, but they did. One company did. It's Pegasus. And they have spyware capable of being secretly and remotely installed and operated by anyone who kind of wants to spy on you, on your phone, your smartphone. You will not know this has appeared in your phone. It's happening remotely. You don't know it's there. They can access the microphone, listen to anything that's going on in the room where your phone is located, switch on the camera without you noticing, record everything, and go through all of your phone content, everything you're saying to everyone all of the time. Sometimes it's been used for good. It's been used in the capture of Mexican drug trafficker El Chapo, which we learned in the doc. The authorities got access to his communications. But it's also been used in the assassination of the journalist, Saudi journalist, and the dissident Jamal Khashoggi in 2018. Now, the company says, look at every customer who buys our software fully vetted, and they have to be approved, and everyone acts responsibly. But there's loads of evidence that governments who have this stuff have extended the use far beyond, you know, tackling organised crime or terrorism. Sometimes they find it useful in you know, surveilling journalists. Human rights activists also found to have been spied upon. And there's an air of scepticism over the good intentions of governments through this whole story. I mean, the US government is also using the Pegasus spyware, but says, oh, we do it responsibly. Oh, we only do the bad guys. No, no, we'd never spy on ordinary citizens. No, 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 no. So watch that. It's called Surveilled. And you will be scared. Just put you'll do that thing that I saw in the Edward Snowden film with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, where you put the phone in the microwave before they spoke to anyone, because the microwave unit protects all this, apparently. They probably got around that by now as well. By the way, Joe Biden is still the president of the United States, despite all the coverage being about Donald Trump and who he's chosen to be various representatives of cabinet positions. And I bet, as I do, I don't know the people. I know the people who are going to be in things like education secretary and other kind of things we don't think about. I don't know who is the education secretary now or for the last 4 years, or press secretary, because the coverage on Trump is enormous. But anyway, but Joe Biden is still around doing very important things like pardoning turkeys for Thanksgiving, which is an annual tradition, apparently. But the tradition has a long and confused history. Thanksgiving is this Thursday, for those of you paying attention. And so George W. Bush said in 2008, when he was pardoning a turkey, this tradition dates back to the presidency of Harry Truman. Bill Clinton in 1996 says, I'm continuing a tradition started 50 years ago by President Truman. Apparently, it's not true. There's even a story suggesting Abraham Lincoln was the first to let a turkey go because his son liked the turkey. The White House Historical Association says that's apocryphal, which means, you know, probably not true. Feels true. Truman was the first to be given a turkey, but not the first to pardon one. And the turkey lobby in America has been presenting presidents with turkeys since 1947. So Truman was the president, but he didn't pardon the turkey. It was post-World War II. He ate the turkeys because even the White House was struggling to get meat. The first documented reprieve of a turkey was the 1963. So there you go. With Thanksgiving 1963, well, JFK was dead by then, wasn't he? So it was Lyndon Johnson. But here's Joe Biden pardoning the turkeys and explaining why he named them Peach and Blossom.
In the last 4 years, I've had the honor to continue that tradition by pardoning Peanut Butter and Jelly, Chocolate and Chip, Liberty and Belle, and today, Peach and Blossom will join the free birds of the United States of America.
It sounds a bit like pecan, but I think peach and blossom. But thank God he got through the sentence. Phew, it's always nerve-wracking when he starts talking. Listen, we're going to play a song. It's a lovely, bright, sunny day in Dublin and has a beautiful, wintry feeling. We're going to be kind of festive adjacent. It's a winter song. You're going to enjoy it. 087-032-3232 is the WhatsApp. Here are, what is it, Fleet Foxes.
I was following the eye, 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 was following the pack, all swallowed in their coats, with scarves of red tied round their throats, to keep their little heads from falling in the snow.
Ah, that was a gorgeous little break for you, wasn't it? White Winter Hymnal is what it's called, Fleet Foxes. Makes me miss frosty mornings out in the big stretched hills of Muine Chan. 087-032-3232 is the WhatsApp. We're going to have a chat with Sharon Smurfit right after these.
Text 51551. Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.
Make Christmas for everyone at Dunn Stores, with festive savings on a great variety of tasty treats, like Cadbury chocolate pouches and large cans of Pringles, now half price. And fill the fridge with a range of refreshing soft drinks, like 7-Up 2 litres and Club Orange 1.75 litres, also half price. Plus, you can save again at the till with a 10 off 50 grocery voucher.
However you do your Christmas shop, make Christmas for everyone with Dunn Stores. Terms and conditions apply. Voucher can be used in next grocery shop of €50 or more. Prices subject to deposit return scheme fees.
Make a smarter energy choice. Save up to €849 on dual fuel when you switch to our smart all-day plan at BoardGoshEnergy.ie.
Estimated annual bill of €2,433. New customers only. 32% discount off all standard electricity unit rates and 29% off gas unit rates. See BoardGoshEnergy.ie for full T's and C's.
Mr. Blue Sky, please tell us why.
The Euro Millions jackpot is an estimated €210 million. Play responsibly, in store, in app, or at lottery.ie. The National Lottery. It could be you.
This is Colin Lee, Head of Programme Operations for Goal. This Christmas, families across the Middle East, Africa, and Central America are being driven to the very brink of survival by conflict and climate change. Goal urgently needs your help to reach more people. Make a life-saving Christmas donation today at goal.ie. That's goal.ie. Thank you.
Coming up on the show today, we'll have all the latest from the campaign trail and the last of our leaders' interviews as the general election looms into sight. Chef Brian McDermott gets spicy with his latest hero ingredient. And have you noticed that rectangular lump on the shirts of professional rugby players? It's a GPS tracker. And Adam Maguire will reveal why they wear them. Join us at 10 on RTE Radio 1 and on the RTE Radio app.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's For Women. Don't live your life on hold with online car insurance that's driven to save you time and money.
Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1.
And 51551 also for your text. Now, the name Smurfit, it conjures up various images for us. Heritage fortunes, Irish business legend, cardboard and rich lists. And many of you may have seen the documentary, a fascinating documentary on the life of Michael Smurfit recently and his family. And this morning we're going to meet someone from the inner circle of that dynasty, his daughter, Sharon Smurfit. She's a mother of two grown-up boys and is self-employed in the golf industry. Sharon, good morning to you.
Good morning, Oliver.
Where in the Smurfit family tree do you come? Are you a middle child or...?
I am the third child, two older brothers and a younger sister.
Is that worse than the Prince Harry position then down the pecking order a bit?
I think I get away with everything as the third child.
Yeah. You're the daddy's girl, sort of?
No, you just get to do the oldest and the youngest are the most, you know, are looked after.
They're the golden children.
The golden children.
Where was home growing up?
Stirlorgan.
Stirlorgan, all your life?
All my life, yeah.
So. And I believe you still live around that environs.
I actually live near here, actually. I've never, this for my first time in RT in all the years that I've lived locally. So
I would consider this more or less, you know, very much the same hinterland. So, and that's the kind of preserve of posh children, really, isn't it? They rarely leave where they grow up.
Well, I don't know. Look, you know, Dublin is Dublin. Anywhere you live in Dublin is great. That's the way I look at it.
Okay. So. You love it. You love the place. Do you realise, or does a child realise when they're growing up in a very storied family and your granddad is the Jefferson Smurfit, who I saw in the documentary, he's like a kind of a Dickensian version of Robert Maxwell. Looks utterly terrifying. are you aware as a child that your life is very different to almost everybody else in the country?
No, not at all, actually, funny enough. I always remember Grandad arriving with a bar of Dairy Milk chocolate every Sunday. That's how my memories of him. Obviously, he died when I was very young. Yeah. And my Nana was living in Fox Rock or down near Fox Rock Church. And Dad, he was around and we cycled to school and we did normal things and, you know, hung out with our friends. Didn't feel any different to anybody else at the time.
And is anybody else, because maybe you go to schools where everybody is from dynasty families and...
Yeah, I went to Mount Anville, loved it, absolutely loved it. Not sure Mount Anville loved me. I wasn't,
oh, really?
wasn't the best student in the world, but I absolutely loved it. I loved the sports, I loved the hockey, I loved my friends, I loved the teachers, but... I think I certainly gave them some heartache, certainly to Deirdre Doyle at the time. I certainly gave heartache, but
Deirdre Doyle, a teacher? Or?
She was the headmistress at the time.
The headmistress, okay. Yeah. Now, that is a fancy school, isn't it? Would friends have been sort of awed by, oh, we're going to get to go over to the Smurfit house?
Well, all my friends went to the same school. So I'm still friends with the same girls that I went to in junior infants. So we grew up together, so they know me well. So.
By the way, that's also a hallmark, I know, Russell Carroll Kelly, of the posh people of Dublin.
Absolutely,
you're still hanging out with your national school friends.
Yeah, well, it wasn't national school in those days. It was the Mount Anville had the has the Montessori school. Yeah.
And that's a girl. That was an all-girls school. And they inevitably end up marrying the boys from the old boy, the other party school. that seems to be, that's our outside view of it anyway. Dad is Michael Smurfit, formidable figure. Do you see a lot of Dad growing up?
Yeah, I saw a good bit of him, actually. I mean, mostly around holiday time. I think, you know, obviously, I certainly learned a few things myself from the documentary.
Did you?
Yeah, because, you know, there was, you know, I suppose I didn't realise how hard he worked at the time. Mm-hmm. And so it was nice to sort of see him in action, you know, because he would have been travelling an awful lot. But he always seemed to come home at the appropriate time of school reports and was always there for, we always went on holidays together. So we always had Christmas together. We always had our summer holidays together. So I suppose it felt, you know, normal. I don't know.
The school reports. So that sounds like he came home specially to see how you're getting along.
Always seemed to be the case.
Really?
Yeah.
What was that day like when the school reports arrived?
Pretty terrifying, especially not the most studious person in the world, but was always able to work my way around it somehow.
Would he be disappointed if it wasn't good?
No, I think he would just keep saying, try harder. Okay. Better luck next time.
you got away with it.
I got away with it. I think I got away with it more so than the boys.
Okay. And as you say, the oldest and youngest.
Yeah.
But he kept a watchful eye on education and...
Yeah, no, he was good. He always knew what we were up to and stuff like that. So it wasn't too bad. But it was nice. We had a lot of freedom, obviously, because he wasn't there a lot of the time. So.
Okay, when he's travelling, as we saw on the documentary.
Yeah.
He says quite matter-of-factly, doesn't it? He's not there. This is the sacrifice for success. It is a
sacrifice for success. And I'm sure a lot of people out there are working very hard and, you know, are working in their businesses that are, you know, losing out on seeing their children every single day or whatever. But that's just the way of life, unfortunately.
He doesn't say it in a regretful way that he wishes he was at home more.
No. I would totally agree with that. I couldn't see him as the stay-at-home dad now, for sure. He was definitely very driven, very, very focused, and still is, even at his age now.
Yeah, remarkable. Is he 88?
88, yeah. Just visited him there, came home last night, so he's in great form. Fantastic.
In Monaco,
yeah.
On the Lady Anne McGee, which is named after his mum.
Named after his mum, yeah.
There was something so Citizen Kane about seeing him sitting in this lovely timber boat with the portrait of his mother looking down.
Yeah, I mean, he had a great passion for his mum and dad, you know. And, you know, I think he was thrown into work at a very young age. So, you know, so it was
attracts a multi-millionaire to the tax haven of Monte Carlo?
I wonder.
Your mum, Norma Smurfit. Mm-hmm. I was interested that only archive appears of her in that documentary. She's very low key.
Mum's very private. She would have been much more public in the day. She would have done a lot of work for charity. She would have been a philanthropist of helping so many different people all over the country, and that's what she put her time into in her, you know.
She's an extraordinary figure in charity.
Extraordinary. I mean, incredible energy. I mean, she's mid-80s now and she's incredible. I mean, you know, we're very lucky to have both our parents still here, you know.
Was she somebody who kept tabs on your exam procedures? I don't want to focus on this too much, but I am interested when, you know, there is a billionaire and someone who's around the place and mum's at home having to do all of the child rearing and looking and minding you.
Well, mum's from England, so she kept us very grounded. All of us were very grounded. If you wanted to go out at the weekend when you sort of became 17, 18, you needed to earn the money. You didn't. There was no handouts and those, you know, here's your, you got a bit of pocket money, but that was for school and you used it wisely. But no, don't remember being handed out wads of cash to go to school or go out at the weekends or anything like that. And some weekends you didn't go out at all. And if you were sick on a Thursday and you didn't go to school on Friday, you didn't go out the weekend at all.
You had to earn it. And they weren't handout parents throughout your life.
No, never. I've never. I mean, certainly in times of, you know, there has been times, obviously, they have helped out for sure, you know, and with advice and helping out maybe, you know, with a bit of business advice and also financially and a bit of business and stuff like that. But no, I mean, I failed miserably in some businesses that I've done.
Really?
And hopefully this one will be a little bit more successful.
That must be difficult to do when you're in a family that it was so successful. in two generations in your life.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, the name is obviously, it's a very proud name to carry, but it can also be a very daunting name to carry. And, you know, the expectation of you is a lot higher, I think, in my view, but that's, other people might say differently.
How do you feel that?
It's, you know, sometimes, you know, I feel sometimes like, you know, I wouldn't go for that job interview because people would say, why do you need to work? I mean, I don't, if I, for the amount of times I used to hear that, why do you need to work?
Yeah.
I mean, I've always worked. I went, since the day I left school, I didn't go to college. I went straight to Australia. I worked there for 6 months. I came home. I went work in Smurfit's. I came, went out. I went to England. So I've always, always worked, you know, so.
You need to work.
I need to work. Yeah, I mean, for mentally as well as anything else, you have to get out and do stuff, you know. And I think I have my mum's, you know, I like helping people. I like you know, doing stuff for other people as well. So I should have been a nurse. My husband says I should have been a nurse.
Oh, right. Is it too late?
It's way too late for
that.
Is it?
Yeah. That's wrong with you. That sounds like,
at my age,
like
it's way too late.
you seem like a spring chicken still. I suppose when people say you mustn't need to work, it's like, even if you're working and they're not handout type parents, there is the feeling that the rest of us don't have, which is like, if you're on your uppers, you will probably be bailed out.
You know what? There's a possibility. I don't know. I haven't. I've never felt the need to ask because, you know, you can. I always say you can sleep in one bed. You can, you know, you have you, once you can have a nice few holidays a year, play a good bit of round of golf, join a golf club, stuff like that. In my world, you know, what else do you need if you can buy a few things?
Are they basics?
Yeah, well, the basics, obviously.
That sounds like a lavish lifestyle to most people.
Really? I think a lot of people go on holidays. I think everybody takes at least two holidays a year.
Certainly not the majority of the country, I would say.
Yeah, no, that's
with the golf and everything like that. Because golf is seen as an elite sport. There are certainly parts of it, but it's quite a broad sport now in Ireland in particular, isn't it?
100%. And, you know, Golf Ireland are doing great things at the moment. They're putting on lots of different, you know, to get more people involved. And there are many ways to get more people involved. So hopefully, you know, it is a sport for everyone. Like, you know, I can't play rugby, not many people can, but everybody, I think golf is a great game for all ages. And no matter what age you are, you can start golf.
You started a little later, I think, did you? You didn't play golf all your life?
No, I started in London very, very briefly in a public golf course with some friends of mine, because there were no mobile phones in those days. So if I didn't play golf with them, I didn't know where they were going that evening. Okay. And then really only started competitively in my early 30s.
Oh, competitively?
Mm.
And are you playing competitively still, as in?
Well, competitively, I mean in competitions club. Within yeah. the club, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So you love it?
Absolutely love it, yeah. So I started then working in the K Club, and I suppose that's where one of the sort of handouts that you say, you know, that you could possibly get from your family is that, you know, I was looking for work and what to do with myself. And that's when Dad said, well, look, would you go into the K Club and work in the, you know, in the golf side?
And the K Club was essentially one of his retirement projects, even though it became a huge success.
Well, it was owned by the Smurfit Group originally, and then he bought it, and then himself outright. And fantastic venue. Like, you know, I mean, it was his pet project. It was his place. And
did you have to ask him for the job? How does that work?
No, I think he sort of said, you know, what do you want? Like, what do you know? And I said golf. And he said, well, then let's get you into the golf side of stuff in the K Club. But so that's what I did. I went down.
Did you have to do a lot of work in that job?
Oh, yeah. I was started off as director of membership, and then I went into director of golf. And then from there, I studied actually to become a golf professional, in the golf industry through the Club Managers Association of Europe. And I got my diploma, and you can go on further to get your CCM if you want. And so that was the first time I actually did some proper education after school.
and then it was sold.
And then it sold, and then COVID hit, and, you know, like a lot of people at home for a while. Worked in the vaccination centre with some.
Did you?
I did. I worked helping the volunteers. I went online, looked for something to do, and
was it a job or was it a voluntary?
No, voluntary. Oh, the, right, okay. Through Volunteer Ireland. Yeah.
Where did you do that?
Hmm?
Where did you do it?
In the Aviva.
Oh, in the Aviva Stadium.
Yeah, so it was great fun because, well, I say great fun, it was obviously not, you know, it was the camaraderie of people coming in. It was lovely to see people because a lot of people hadn't obviously seen people for a long time. So I made some great friends there. And
you really do want to be a nurse.
I really did want to be a nurse.
Someone's having to go easy. The chip is getting a bit obvious. The girl had no influence on where she happened to be born into, says Claire.
So, say that again.
Apparently, it's a text. Saying that I sound like I have a chip on my shoulder because I'm questioning. But I think it's fascinating to hear from someone from inside a privileged family.
Yeah,
and we're just getting your story.
So now
you went back to golf after.
Yeah. So basically, K-Club. What I decided, like again, back helping people, I wanted to find an area that I could help Irish golf clubs. And especially the smaller golf clubs. We have some amazing golf clubs in Ireland. And, you know, a lot of the big clubs are well sold out already for 2025.
Yes,
and with American visitors, which we all rely on very heavily, our tourism. And so I just decided to set up a website originally to start the golf industry. So one section has golf industry tips and things like that. And then the other side I started to do about golf for the golfer. Mm-hmm. And on there, there's, you know, anything. I do most of my work from 6 to 10 p.m. at night. So, or even as my husband say, I think it's later than 10, but I trail through the internet. I find what they're publishing, what they're posting, and I take it down and I put it onto my website. So if they're advertising an open day or, you know, a membership or anything like that. So, and then I set up a community page on Facebook and started doing e-zines, and so it's sort of just taken off from there, you know. Okay. And helping golf
clubs. And it's clubs that need a bit of a leg up.
Yeah, I mean, just to promote them, you know. I mean, a lot of clubs, and try and encourage them and show them how to use the social media and get involved in promoting their own club, you know.
This sounds like clubs mostly outside of Dublin or around the place that are maybe not in such tourist hubs, is that there?
Yeah, I mean, every club does a lot of open days, you know. So, you know, there might be a €25 green fee or a €20, even 30. Okay. All that makes a difference for people to go to them. So I encourage everybody to go. And even if you can't, don't play golf, you'll call into their clubhouse and have dinner. Some of them do fantastic Sunday lunches.
Good point.
That's
the sort of thing you're telling them to advertise as well, is it?
Yeah. I mean, I don't advertise their Sunday lunches and stuff like that. So I mostly do golf-related stuff. Then if the PGA Pro, the Irish PGA Pro, they all have shops and, you know, they all sell their goods.
Course,
so it's good to support your local business.
Those golf clubs you're talking about that you're helping are obviously reliant on the domestic visitors, aren't they, rather than the
mostly
Yorkers.
Yeah, we do get some American tourists. I mean, there's a guy came over there last year and he went to, you know, to Boris Golf Club, you know, random.
Oh, nice.
You know, he just happened to call in there, so, and it got fantastic views. So it is important, you know, that the smaller clubs are known about.
They love coming here, don't they? The golfers, the Americans.
Yeah.
I think we have most of the golf links in the world, don't we, because of it being an island.
Yeah, and
golf
the Americans,
links being on the coastal, they don't have those opportunities in America.
Exactly. They play Parkland, so their vision is to play, this is it, it's links, it's Scotland, Ireland, you know, where all the links courses are. So, yeah, so we have to go with the domestic market or anybody, you know, a lot of guys from the UK come over, or we get a lot of German visitors, and now we're a lot from Asia coming in as well.
And sure, look, if someone keels over in the golf course, you know, your inner nurse can race over.
Hopefully they'll have defibrillators on the golf course.
You've loads of messages coming in actually for you.
God.
Someone says they follow you on Instagram. Okay, so you have to do all that social media stuff. You should have your own TV show. You showcase all that's good about Irish golf, golf courses and so on. Board Fáilte, please note. Well, yeah, Fáilte Ireland are the domestic ones. That's from Roisin Q. Maybe she's... if she's Mount Anvil.
Don't know her.
Don't joking. It is sad how we perceive success. Family and friendships are far more wholesome and fulfilling than money. We need to change the narrative, says Aoife. I mean, I think you were fortunate to be in a close family. You're all close together, I believe.
Yeah, we're very close. So we have a WhatsApp group together, so the four of us, and we... Yeah, we put up the. I didn't even tell. I think I told my sister this morning. I didn't tell the boys. I actually forgot. So they'll probably kill me.
Be careful, the spyware, you know, here there's a Smurfit family WhatsApp group. That could be a target.
Yeah.
Hi there. I worked for the Smurfits for over 20 years. Amazing employers and colleagues. Always grateful for the opportunities and happiness working at Smurfit. That's from Tricia from Cabra. Norma Smurf, this is for your mum again. Norma Smurf is a charity champion, a woman who worked hard, was so approachable and decent, says Carmel Doyle in Beaumont. Your mum became an Irish citizen only for the first time last year.
She did, I know. And she's still waiting for her passport.
Oh, God.
Imagine 9 months later. So she finally had to send in her other passport and she's waiting for her Irish passport to come back. So.
Much deserved.
Yeah.
This is another message. I'm often in Vincent's private for cancer treatment and often comment I can look down on the golfers in the Ellen Park course. I follow Sharon on Twitter. She said a virtual hi to me in the comments more than once. She seems like great crack. Says David. Good luck to you.
I do my best. I do get messages when I'm on the golf course to say wave at me.
I thought that was a breach of etiquette now on if you're looking at your phone on that.
I know. Well, you know what? We're all very conscious of it, like in Elm Park, because, you know, we're very lucky to be playing that par three in front of the hospital. And a lot of the members do wave up and we do get a lot of waves.
And the wonderful space that you have
back
in that area.
Nursing, so, you see, back to my debate, nursing. Yeah.
We're out of election. We can't discuss elections.
No, definitely not.
And someone's asked, which you've already kind of mentioned, the Smurfit name would have opened a lot of doors, but it probably closed some as well. It's kind of
I think for me, as a myself personally, I just really never used the name. I think because I lived abroad for so long, when I lived in London, I was independent. Nobody knew the name Smurfit. It could have been, you know, anything. Yeah. And so there was a sort of sense of freedom growing up for myself when I left Ireland. So I think it's really only since I've come in the last, since COVID, that I've actually started to embrace it and sort of say, you know what, you're not getting rid of it, so you might as well use it. And so if I can do some good with it and, you know, in the golf, obviously, world and, you know, let me try anyway, you know.
Well, you've done a good job of it. Thanks a million for coming in chat, because I'd say it's very rare that people are willing to talk because families are very quiet and private, but you have to work, as you say,
thank
and this
you.
Part of it. I want to mention your website for any golf clubs out there who think we do need a bit of help with their membership.
And please just DM me or message me or email me. All my information is on my website.
It's online, absolutely. And that's sharonsmurfit.com.
That's correct.
I think people know how to smell it. Spell it by now.
Spell it even.
Jeepers. Maybe there is a chip on my shoulder as a smell. Sharon Smurfit, thanks so much.
You're very
good luck
welcome,
to you.
Oliver.